Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
She may not be Goldilocks, but a woman makes herself right at home in a property that doesn't belong to her.
Now, the homeowner wants this woman out of her house, but she's having a tough time giving the squatter the boot. Fox News' Taryn Asher live in Detroit with more on the intruder who just will not leave, Taryn.
Yeah, and you know what? She just came home right now, but we've been waiting to speak with her all night because the homeowner says that she unlawfully walked into the house, took ownership of this house, and has been living there and refuses to leave. She just pulled up right now, and before we get to our full story, ma'am, what do you have to say about that? Are you a squatter?
No, I'm not.
Why are you not a squatter?
I would like to park my vehicle if you don't mind.
Well, we would like to know because this woman says you moved in and you won't leave and she owns this house.
I'll tell you my credentials as, you know, why I'm here.
She says that you said this was part of a program.
I have a construction lien for the repairs that I put into the house. Someone had broken into the house on July the 4th and they stripped the radiators and I made a report.
But she said that you broke into this house and have been living here because you said that you have the right to live here.
I've been released with her since October 9th, 2012. And then in February 2011, we had to vacate because the boiler was damaged. The only thing I took, I own Little Egypt Publishing Company. I took all my books and my writings. All right, well, but my furnitures were still left in here.
One more thing. She also said that you said that this was part of a program, that you felt that anybody who can go into Detroit, take over an abandoned house, and live there.
Well, I'm an advocate for affordable housing. That's a part of my campaign as a U.S. write-in.
Did you say that to her, and do you believe that?
Well, I believe that since I met her, the first time I met her when I was running for state senate, 2010, and she was also running for political office. That was a part of my belief. I signed an oath pledging that I would fight for affordable homes.
All right, well, ma'am, maybe we can talk to you about this a little bit more in a moment. There's a lot to this story. Take a look what the homeowner had to say about this.
You can't get any houses like this anywhere in America, especially for this price.
Heidi Peterson always dreamed of living in an historical home. In May of 2010, she bought this one in Detroit's Boston Edison District for $23,000. After being away for a year, she returned home last week and realized she got way more than she bargained for.
I told her it was my house.
She says a woman was living in her house, the one who put her pictures on the mantle. Heidi learned from neighbors she'd been living there for a few months. Heidi claims the squatter changed the locks, reworked the plumbing, replaced her appliances, put a lien on the house, and even changed the curtains. And now this squatter won't leave.
She locked the door, so.
So now they are forced to sleep one room away from each other. Heidi with her one-year-old daughter.
People would find this odd that you're living with a squatter.
That's, I guess, something that happens in Detroit.
An unusual situation and, as we discovered, not your average squatter. Her name documented all over the house, missionary Tracy Elaine Blair, a write-in candidate for president.
Do you feel safe?
I don't know. I don't know what the capabilities are. We're afraid of her mindset of entitlement.
A squatter doesn't have a legal right to the property, but under the law, the homeowner cannot remove a squatter by force. In most cases, the homeowner has to file a civil action in court, prove it's their property, and evict the squatter. That's what Heidi is trying to do.
She thinks that this is a program in Detroit to take people's homes and fix them up, and then she gets to keep them.
Because Heidi spent all of her money on this house, she says she can't afford to go anywhere else. And until she can legally kick the woman out, they are forced to live under the same roof.
I thought, if the house is not safe, how can I come here with my child? There's an issue with that. But should I lose my house to a squatter because I don't have rights to my property, or should I fight to get it back?
And Heidi also claims that things have come up missing in her house, that it's certainly not the way that she left it. But, of course, you heard the woman, the supposed squatter here, and she claims that there was a lease. Heidi said there was not. We have not been able to see that, but she also says that she has the right to be able to live here if she fixes up the home. So there is clearly a lot to the story, and this is a perfect example why police don't go in when they're called and just remove someone from the house, because they don't have that proof on who actually lives in the house. And that's why, like in this case, the woman has to go to court, get an order of eviction, and show prove that she owns the house, and then evict the woman that lives there. That's why there is a legal process, and it would take 30 days to get her out. So clearly there is a lot to this story. We would like to take a look at that lease, and we plan to after we send it back to you.
All right, Taryn, so we know why the police won't get involved in this kind of thing. What about attorneys? I got to believe it's very difficult for either one of them to get an attorney because they're cash-strapped in the first place, which is why they're living under the same roof.
Well, yes, Heidi told us that she can't afford an attorney. She put everything into this house, right now she can't even afford to move anywhere, let alone pay for legal fees. But she said she needs one because there's no reason why there should be a lien against the property. In fact, that lien is in that woman's name, the supposed squatter here. So a lot of this stuff happening while she was gone. She said when she returned home, you know, there was a lot of changes to this house, stuff that she did not approve. So it sounds like it's going to be quite a legal battle, and you're right. She wishes she could afford an attorney right now. Back to you.
All right, Taryn Asher reporting to us.
All right, today's live stream podcast jump off topic is 47% chess. And the reason why I played the audio that you just listened to, about the squatter is because most people who live in the United States do not know the landscape of the United States. And using the chessboard and chess analogy and chess pieces, I think, is a good teaching tool. So once again, the title of today's podcast is 47% Chess. Now, in terms of the game of chess, well, first thing before I even get that far, why 47%? Well, 47% of the continental United States, matter of fact, throwing Alaska too, Hawaii, 47% of the United States, with over 320 million people, 47% of the landmass of the United States is unoccupied. Nobody, no human, lives in at least 47% of the United States. That's nearly half of the country's landmass. That's a staggering number. And we're over 200 years old. Now, I've got some statistics in our scrolling marquee on Blog Talk Radio. You go there, you can follow. Or if you go to our Facebook page, It's My House TV, and then I've got maps and statistics on that page right at the top so you can follow along. That's It's My House TV on Facebook. Now, once again, 47% of the landmass of the United States is unoccupied. What does that look? Well, we'll come to that in a moment. 3% of the landmass of the United States is urbanized. That's the New Yorks, the LAs, the Bostons, Seattle, the Miamis, those places. Overall, 97% of the United States, which includes the 47% which is unoccupied, is rural land. Now, let's get to the population. Now, let's illustrate this on the board, a chess board. That's what we call a 47% chess. 3%, now the chess board has 67 squares. 67 squares on the chess board. 3% of the chessboard is represented by just two squares. That's 3% of a chessboard. That's two squares. The remaining squares that you see are rural. And then within that, the matter of fact, let me do it right now. Squares. Absolutely no human being lives in those spots. 86% of the population of the United States occupies just two squares out of the total of 67 on that board. So when you have that many people crammed into just two squares, that's where you have the rules, the regulations, the laws, the cabin fever, the supply and demand effect. All that goes on within that, those two squares out of a total of 67 squares. People who squat, their minds are basically just in those two squares. They're not aware of the 65 squares that are rural and the 31 squares within that where nobody lives. Let me break it down even further. before I even go to that, 92% of African Americans in the United States lives within those two squares. Is it racism or is it competition? I think it's competition. You're fighting over the resources in just two squares, and you're totally ignoring the 97 squares where it's totally wide open with no competition. So no amount of legislation is going to turn that around. It's just common sense. Move into the 65 squares where there's little or in many cases zero competition to do what you want to do, live the way you want to live. Now, but you're going to have to develop some skill sets to live in those 65 squares. Let's go to land use now. 654 million acres of land in the United States is pastoral rangeland. 538.6 million acres of land in the United States is forest. 391.5 million acres of land is cropland in the United States. 168.6 million acres of land in the United States is called special needs. That could be military bases or things of that nature. 68.9 million acres of land in the United States is classified as miscellaneous. And 86% of the population occupies 69.4 million acres of land. That's urbanized. That's the 3%. Cropland, forest land, pastures, and rangeland dwarf the urbanized aspect of it. And that's how show me a squatter and I'll show you somebody that doesn't know their geography of the United States. Now, what we'll be doing along within our challenge of helping people or teaching people how to build their own place, because a big part of this is geography. Because, see, before you build it, you got to think about where am I going to place this. I do not recommend building anything within the 3%, the urbanized landmass. It'll be difficult to get what you build legally onto those places. But hey, look, 65% of the United States has low regulation, or in many cases, in 31 areas of the United States, or 31%. There are no rules, laws, or regulations. So we'll get, wait a minute here. I'm going to go to the phone lines here soon, but it's really a chessboard. Let me see if we got any other notes to on this. All right, 67 spaces, that's the total on a chessboard. 32 spaces, now 32, when you set up the chessboard, you got your pawn line, your front line defense, and then you got, the bishop, the rooks, the king, queen, knights, and all that. Each side occupies 16 spaces. That's the total of 32 spaces total. So we're talking about those 32 pieces. Let's say 32, let's get it out to be, 27 point, now 86% of the population occupies those two spaces. In terms of the chess pieces, out of the 32 pieces, chess pieces, 27.52 of those space pieces are all crammed in those two squares on the chessboard. So when you have that many pieces, 27.2 out of the total 32, when you have them crammed into that, that's where the rules, the regulations, the so-called red line, you know, why? Now, this is just me saying this. My whole thing is, once you learn the landscape, oh, put it this way. Once you learn the landscape that out of the 32 pieces, you have 27 of those pieces crammed into two spaces. Well, you got the redlining, you got people that march and protest, and they have all never-ending legislation that doesn't solve any problems. When you have these homicides and all this, that's all because you got cabin fever. You got 27 of the 32 pieces in just two spaces out of a total of 67 pieces on a chessboard. The suburban crowd, not the suburban crowd, the rural crowd, my crowd, is just five of us. So we've got 65 squares, and we got plenty of land where if we don't want to, we don't even have to see each other. We don't have to deal with the police. We don't have to deal with homicides. We don't have to march. We don't have to protest. We don't have to do this legislation. We don't have to fix nothing. Because it's just five people, and you got 65 squares left. Martin Luther King came through. No disrespect to Martin Luther King, but I don't think Martin Luther King gave, I don't think he knew his geography that well. Meg Evans, no disrespect to him, but I don't think his geography. Those guys had good intent. They had good intent. But the promised land ain't within those 2 acres, those two squares out of 67 on the board. The promised land is in the 65 squares where five people won't even run into each other unless they want to. That's why I call this 47% chess. Because in 2022, we're in that right now, going into 2023, 47%, and if you go to our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV, just go to that, our page on Facebook, It's My House TV, I got the maps, and you can look at it for yourself. Nearly half of the country, and we're over 200 years old, matter of fact, let's see, this 2022, 1776. This country is 246 years old. And nearly half of the country in over almost 250 years, over half of the, nearly half of the country is empty. On those maps, on our Facebook page, It's My House TV on Facebook, you'll see where to set up shop. The George Floyds, the Trayvon Martins, the Eric Gardners, the Sandra Blands, and we can keep on going. All those homicides or deaths, because Sandra Bland was a suicide, that happened within those two squares out of the 67. That's where the drama, the trauma, all that is in within those two squares. Now, to make it in the 65 squares, you're going to have to develop some skill sets. You might have to get your carpentry game on and learn how to build your own house. As a matter of fact, the Amish and the Mennonites, as well as others, they live in the 65, they're one of the five in the 65 squares. So you don't need affirmative action in the 47%, or actually 97%, because 47%, nobody lives here. That's within the 95% that's rural. We'll be covering this more in the detail with more numbers. They'll go to the phone lines here, but that gives you an idea of 47% chess. You need to be playing like the Monopoly game. You know what? Build yourself four greenhouses within those 65 squares that where it is little or no people or competition. That's where you live. Now, if you want to go visit friends in those two squares, go to church in those two squares, you know, go bowling, whatever you want to do in those two squares, that's fine. We'll be back with more 47% chess when our phone lines when we come right back.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Before we go to the phone lines here, I want to share with you guys a story that I came across, somebody told me about yesterday. This is why we're talking about 47% chess. You need to play that game. In Baltimore, and I want to get to the article. Let's see. Let me find it. And there's some YouTube videos on it as well. Okay. Here's the headline. Real estate investor shot, killed outside of his investment property. Now, this happened 3 days ago. Real estate investor shot, killed outside investment property. Police investigating. The Baltimore Police Department is investigating after a real estate investor was gunned down outside of one of his properties in North Baltimore. Baltimore Police Department said Jaleel George, 24 years old, he was just 24 years old, black man, was fatally shot in the alley between Oswego Avenue and Loyola Southway in the Green Spring community on Wednesday, December the 7th. And they have a picture of the young man. No. He's online. Okay. Let me read another article. Okay, a young man who had dreams of making Baltimore better, a better place, was killed in Park Heights. That's a section of Baltimore City. Jaleel George, only 24 years old, was fatally shot Thursday as he walked through a potential investment property in Park Heights. Now, you know, I used to have a property in Baltimore, and the first place I bought was a three-unit building with a partner in Park Heights, right across from the Park Sausage Building. I did that in 1984. But I pulled out of Baltimore like when O'Malley got elected mayor the first time. Anyway, after a number of shootings in Park Heights, the Park Heights neighborhood, over recent days, police have identified one of the victims as George. Those close to him said that he was an aspiring real estate mogul that may have been caught in the wrong place at the wrong time. Terry Uncle T. Williams, CEO of Challenge to Change Mentoring Program and a close friend of George, told 11 News, "The whole thing just doesn't make sense. I can't even begin to fathom in my wildest imaginations how something like this could have happened outside of mistaken identity," Williams said. Police said George was shot in the arm and head just before 3 p.m. Wednesday at Oswego on Oswego Avenue. He died at the scene. "I could never see anything in him that would question whether or not he was into some sort of foul play," Williams said. George was an up-and-coming real estate investor working with some of the top realtors in this field. Williams said he would tour neighborhoods with him and said George wanted to make the difference in his community. He believes he was in Park Heights eyeing up his first property. And Park Heights has historically been Lower Park Heights, because Upper Park Heights has a white and Jewish and affluent community, but Lower Park Heights, at least the last time I went through there, was depressed and mostly black folks that lived there. And it was a good place where, I mean, at one time you can buy buildings like a three-unit building. How much did you buy that for? And we bought a three-unit apartment for like $15,000. But this was back in the early 80s, though. Okay. All right. This was his first home. This was his first investment. This young, bright, brilliant young king through his property. Let's see. I almost was sure he was analyzing property. Okay. He was also a graduate of Morgan State University, and his major was electrical engineering and computer technology. He has a Facebook page, and let me get the correct spelling for you if I pull it up here. Jaleel George, his name is spelled J-A-L-I-L. Once again, J-A-L-I-L. George is his last name. He does have a Facebook page. Take a look at him. The 3%, this happened on the 3%, those two squares on the chessboard. Black folk, and I'm black. I'm just suggesting, I'm telling you what I do. Instead of dealing with stuff on those two little squares, look at the 65 squares. Now, the 65 squares, shit can happen there too. But percentage-wise, you're dramatically safer, and you don't have to worry about fixing properties. You're building what you want to build. Build a business, build an empire, build a family. It's dramatically easier. Or simpler, I'll put it that way, on the 65 squares of the chessboard where you just got five people, representatives of the population, that are out there. You can develop real neighborhoods with real neighbors, no cabin fever, no redlining. You know, all those redlining, affirmative action, all that is within the those two squares. Anyway, all right, that's enough of my rant on that. I hope that whoever did it, I hope they catch up to him quick. But for you guys out there, now I know Baltimore because I didn't start originally in Baltimore, but when I expanded, I know the Park Heights area pretty well. I haven't set foot in Park Heights in probably over 20 years easy. Now, I never ran into any problems or nothing like that in that neighborhood. But Baltimore, just in general, for my taste, Baltimore City, and I'm not picking on Baltimore, but Baltimore, Boston, L.A., I mean, Los Angeles, Seattle, Orlando, take one of those big, too many people, too much government regulation. Those places are what in my opinion, the real United States. The land of opportunity doesn't exist on those two squares. The real United, because Baltimore is in Maryland. If you want to find the real United States within the state of Maryland, you need to go to Western Maryland. The closest that you'll get to Baltimore, D.C., and that's part of the real United States would be a place like Hagerstown, Maryland. Walmart didn't start in New York City. Walmart started in Bentonville, Arkansas. Go to those places with a low pop. I'm just saying. That's what I do. Okay. All right. And that's what we'll be doing with this challenge. And, Chris, I'm coming to you. I got to open up my, find my studio again. 619-768-2945. That's the number. If you got the rural solution, that's where it's at. Let's see. Okay, wait a minute. And that's why I play the Jamarian Styles thing. You know, if he can do it, we can do it. All right, let's see. Okay. Okay, 309 area code, your mic is open.
You know, you were sitting there talking about that chess, you know, and I've heard you in other podcasts talk about it. But today, I just sit and really paid attention to what you were saying, and that's some unbelievable facts. 540 million or something. Never occupied by...
Yeah, there's 538.6 million acres of land in this country, which is nothing but pure forest.
Right. Oh, okay, that's the forest. Then how much was
it that's just the forest
unoccupied?
Alone. 47% of the United States of America is unoccupied. No human occupies 40... That's almost half.
Yeah, it's almost half. And then in 3%, all the people occupy it. So,
right. That's the Baltimore's, the D.C.'s, the Orlando's, the Los Angeles, the Chicago's. That's the 3%.
Right. No, and that's the part I'm getting the most of is we have so much opportunity out there for everyone by not necessarily living on top of each other, but, you know, creating the resource that needs to be created. You know, like you said, you're going to have to get some skill sets. But, you know, that's what they did when this country was built and founded, is people
right.
had to bring skills that they had, and they had to create. And we're all creators, but what kind of cities do we want to see? What kind of living situations do we want to have? You know, do we want the violence because, you know, there's too many in one spot? You know, I don't necessarily know, you know, if one thing is going to change that part, but definitely, you know, I know how people feel out on the farm that we have here in Illinois that we're living in the
right.
city, and they love it. And they still can have what they want. I mean, there's internet. There's, you know, they got phones. They got, heck, they got entertainment. They got a pool table, and they've got things. They can have anything.
Right. It's something that you said on there at least twice. Whatever services or whatever you need, you can bring it out with you.
That's correct. You know, we were able to add a county onto our COC here. There was, you know, it was taking care of like 15 counties in this one COC, but this one county wasn't part. And then they become part, but then, you know, they listened to what they needed to do as they were creating what they needed in their city. And by doing what they've done, though, they put everything, all their resources under one roof. So it's called a one-stop shop. And it was something that I had asked him to do. I was like, look, this is something that I know that people are dealing with, is they're going from here to there. It's liable to take them 2-3 hours to do it, but they get the same no they had there, but they got sent from here to there. I said, you guys need to have a satellite office right here. And we're working on that up in Chicago as well. That needs to be a model, because people that don't definitely have the time to travel across the city to try to get a resource that might not or might be there. They don't know. They're wishing the whole time.
Right.
And they put a lot of effort and energy into it. That effort and energy that they're putting into that, we can have them do something positive already. Don't have to struggle to get it. And bam, now they have. They're not ones that have not, they have. And they can help others have by showing them, hey, y'all need to see there is a way. I was working real hard to have nothing. And now I don't have to work near as hard, and I have what I need. So, you know, that's something that I've noticed but that county is doing phenomenal, and they were able to help five counties that's never had help before by having that one-stop shop. Taking care of that rural land, this is a perfect example because this is a rural city. But it has the amenities that the smaller towns and stuff out there in the county don't have. But by putting everything in one spot, all you had to do was show up. You walk in the door, you're liable to go in six different doors. But when you leave, you have your answers.
All right. Absolutely right. It's like I say, 69.4%. I mean, 69.4 million acres is dwarfed by this. The cropland is over 391 million.
Right.
Cows have over 654 million acres. And then just plain forest is over 538 million acres. And a lot of these places that you can set up shop are within striking distance of what I would call civilization. You know, it might be a 15 to 20 minute drive, and everything you need, Walmart, McDonald's, the bowling alley, all that's there within a 15 to 20 minute drive. So there are scores of places all throughout the country where you can do this. But there's a lot of land out there, and to meet the challenge. And Chris, for the new people listening, what's the challenge that we have? I mean, that you are offering to people.
Well, I would like to be able to come and do a workshop in your community, and you know, not only talk. You know, I don't want to talk very much. I want to talk afterwards, but I would love to show up and change one life or more. And all you got to do is basically order a frame. So it's the community coming together, but it could be your youth program. It could be, I don't mind if it's a prison program. I don't mind if it's a jail program. I don't care if it's just the community itself. But our children need to know that they have this opportunity to where we can do something in the afternoon with them that will change their lives and others' lives every day. And, you know, I was sitting here thinking about our cropland. 200 million acres. You know, if we look at our greenhouse situation, and as we occupy the rural land, but we actually start being able to grow more food in a smaller area and grow it for a longer seasons, then I think we all need to look at, you know, what would a challenge do? You know, we can bring a greenhouse, we can bring a house, so the two of them can actually, you know, actually feed more than just the house. But these greenhouses not only have vegetables in them, they grow fish, vegetables, and mushrooms. So these three components are being done in one area, can turn into a resource for restaurants in your community. So now you can afford to continue to buy these packages and get the people off the street and on their feet. And now the challenge, you know, that's the challenge I'm offering out to the people. Now, LA here has a challenge of a seven-figure day. Now, you can all be part of that because we need everybody. But our goal is to build 100 tiny homes in one day. And we will pull a seven-figure day. People are being paid. Everybody's being paid. It's not like it's saying, hey, come out and you have to do this for nothing. It's saying, we want you to get paid. We want to create. income, revenue. This is how economy grows. But if we take the people that don't have and the ones that are costing us to try to support, and when I am saying try because we're not, try to support them, it's costing us more money than what it would cost us to give them a hand up and realize that it's their choice on where they go in life. But let's give them choices we ain't had, but we do have. The reason we don't have them is because we're working apart, not together. But, you know, the seven-figure day is 100 homes changing 100, at least 101 people's lives.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a 365-day challenge. And I see that all of us coming together and starting these projects, because it's cold out. It's winter. You know, let's go into the new year with a new knowledge, knowing that people's lives are changing on a daily. I can produce hundreds or thousands of these packages. I just need the orders. If you order it, it will show up. But it'll show up and I'll show up. Someone will show up. We're going to help you. We want to help you. Because we're only as strong as our weakest link, right? So let's challenge.
Right.
Not something that'll cause you to sweat, but something that'll take away somebody else's sweat. 28-year-old yesterday telling me how hard it is, and then telling me again this morning how hard it is to be out on the street. And I told him to go to sleep. I said, I'm going to give you a few hours, but I'm going to get you up because you're going to get your night and day right. And so tomorrow you'll be able to be awake, but tonight you're going to sleep. I'm not going to let you sleep all day. But I want to see that change in mind. But I can't make anyone's mind up. But I can give them a chance and an opportunity. Now, it's totally up to you. So right now, you know, I'm dealing with it personally on a daily basis. So it's not something that I have to travel to you to see what's going on. I know what's going on. Thing is I want to travel to you so we can stop what's going on. You know, these machines make 2 feet of material per second. And I can stick them anywhere right in a forest and they won't burn. You know, we know how many millions of acres have been lost to wildfires, but every home that was in those paths of that, those flames, they burnt too. They don't have to anymore. Let's stop it. You know, California got some sense and they passed a law, but it took someone to, you know, give them that seed. I didn't want the publicity for the law. I just needed the law passed. So it's what we do, you know, and there's a lot people don't know. You need to know. And I just need you to investigate. Withouthopeforhousing.org. You can be a difference. You are the change that I want to see. But I want you to know what there is out there and what it can be. So, yep, that's one of my challenges.
All right, yeah. So if the goal is to help, yeah, the goal is to help 101 people. We're going to have to do, and it's all going to be done through collaboration. Because the brain power is there, is available. We know enough people with land. And we have people like Chris that can, you know, produce material and teach people. And then the, even with Carlos, I'm going to open up his mic. And tomorrow we're going to talk about pre-orders. We can even touch on it today because there's a company on YouTube, Boxable. They've got like $1 billion in pre-orders. And they, I don't even think they've done, I don't know, that's an old video. So they could have produced something by now. But pre-order is a good financing technique. So now
we'll keep you guys posted here on you know, on Blog Talk here. But you'll probably have to get on, what do you call it, Clubhouse, where, you know, Clubhouse never sleeps. So, you know, there'll be a lot of discussions on that as well. But that's the goal. So if you guys want to be a part of that, if you don't have Clubhouse on your phone, the app on your phone, download it. If you can't get on there, then we'll touch on it some kind of way here Monday through Friday. Carlos, are you available?
Yes, sir. How are you guys doing today?
Fine. Tell us about your project, and then if a person is interested in pre-ordering or taking a look at the site to see what they will be pre-ordering, just give us some information on that.
Yeah, Brother Chris has the manufacturing capability to build our greenhouses, and I think we came up with a number that's around $150 per square foot. On the bottom end, on the high end, it's probably $200 per square foot, depending on the options. You know, when you start adding solar and things like that, of course, the price goes up. The cost of the greenhouses, the reason that they cost that is because we're talking about a passive solar greenhouse, which requires very, very little heating and cooling and allows you to grow food with 4 feet of snow outside. I've been running mine in my backyard that I made from a carport now for 11 years. And if you go to OU812 Aquaponics, OU812, the letters OU and the numbers 812 and then aquaponics, AQUAPONICS, you'll see videos of the greenhouse operating for 11 years. I think I just took a video last week. So that's the cost for the pre-order. We have a website called dreamhabitat.eco, where you can see a flyover, a 3D render of the greenhouse. And that one's, I think it's a 14 by 16 greenhouse, and it's designed for hobby. Just today, I'm going to start a GoFundMe to try to protect the intellectual property. You know, we've got the buildings. So we've got a patent portfolio on the greenhouses that we're trying to use to monetize in order to fund nonprofits, specifically nonprofits that build tiny homes to feed and house the homeless, especially homeless vets. You know, that's the mission. But sadly, what I'm finding out, and I think Brother Chris has found out, there's plenty of people interested in the commercial end, very few people interested in the humanitarian end. But I've done a context shift. There's a lot of people interested in the commercial end on these patent portfolios, and I can use that in order to fund the nonprofit end. So December 22nd, I've got a deadline to try to protect the buildings that are based on the patented greenhouse technology all over the world. You know, our patents are free for personal and educational use, so I don't want to stop people from, you know, growing food in their backyard. But the reason they're patented is so that way the corporations can't just steal the technology, you know, monetize it and not send us a thank you letter. So that's the reason they're protected. I just got the quote today, which was much lower than I expected, actually, for filing the buildings in 12 countries and regions. I dropped Russia because of the war and because the Russian government said that they would steal all inventions that we file there. I had a patent granted in Russia that I let go because of the war situation. So now the quote that I got was for 12 countries and regions, and it was $46,000. I thought it was going to be more like in the 100,000s. But that's just for the filing. You know, once you file it, you have to maintain it. There's money related to maintaining the portfolio. And the reason it's important is because, you know, without protecting it throughout the world, it can't be monetized. And without monetization, we can't drive the nonprofit, as I have found out. you know, I thought that people would just want to support the nonprofit part of it. But as it turns out, much to my sadness, most large investors are only interested in the money end of it, not in the humanitarian end of it. So, you know, I've been doing pitches and I've been practicing pitches, and now I don't even mention that I was homeless as a vet. I don't mention that the main mission is to feed and house homeless and especially homeless vets. I don't mention that mission because it detracts from the presentation. You know, they don't want to hear that. In fact, I was in a pitch room where they were telling somebody else that was doing something humanitarian. They said, you really shouldn't mention that because it's going to turn investors away. So this is the world we're living in right now. I'm going to start a GoFundMe. I have no other choice. You know, I don't know how else to do it. I don't have the funds to pay for it. You know, I took what little inheritance I had when my mom passed from cancer to protect, you know, the greenhouses, and the buildings are going to be worth, you know, 1,000 times that. I do have some potential Hail Marys. I've got some meetings lined up this week with investors, you know, that are one of them is I've got some people lined up that I'm hoping may be able to save the day on that. But as my plan C, you know, I'm going to go sign up for a GoFundMe today and start telling the story, you know, that I was a homeless vet, that I want to feed and house homeless people, that you know, I ran into Brother Chris. He has the manufacturing technology, you know, just the story that I just said, you know, and see how many people are willing to try to help with the mission in mind, you know, which is to, you know, to help people that have less than we do. So that's where I'm at. I'm very hopeful. I'm leaving it in God's hands, you know, but, you know, I want to say something about that. You can't just leave things in God's hands and say, God will take care of this, God will take care of that. You still have to take action, okay? You know, and I find it, you know, some people that just sort of like, oh, God will take care of everything. No, God will not take care of everything, okay? You have to step up and walk the talk. And that's what God wants to see, you know. So, you know, Brother Chris is walking the talk. L.A., you've been walking the talk. You know, I'm going to walk the talk. So that's all I have to say about that.
Well, I'm pretty confident you'll get it. One of the things that we're going to have to, in order to pull this off, collectively, we're going to have to do some collaborations, because some audiences, I mean, let's face it, most people, when you present something, an opportunity to them, it's they're thinking in their mind, what's in it for me? That's just the natural thing. So we have to look at whatever particular audience that we're talking to, because wealth can be measured, and people measure wealth in different ways. So, you know, we're going to, you know, the wealth could come in the form of social capital, human capital. Somebody could have somebody in, I believe it's in Chris's network, they got like 100 acres of land down in Belize. So, you know, we just had to address a specific market. We have to come to them the way they want to be, you know, presented to. You got to talk to them in their language. So I imagine we're going to be doing a lot of collaborating between now and, December the 22nd?
Well, you know, I have hope, you know, and it's interesting that you know, Chris's company is called Hope, and it gave us the moniker Hope for Dream Habitat. You know, my project was Dream Habitat, and Chris was Hope, and now we have Hope for Dream Habitat. But, you know, I'm very, you know, I've got a call later today with some super high-end, you know, people that could solve the problem, right? I had a meeting with them on Sunday, and I explained, you know, I went through the patent portfolio, I went through the technology, and they understand, you know, sophisticated investors understand patent portfolios. They understand the value of patent portfolios, because a patent portfolio allows you to have proprietary rights. It allows you to have exclusive rights. So it allows you to you know, from a garage to become Apple, from a garage to become Google. That's the whole point of the patent system. So savvy investors understand what I have in my hands. You know, that portfolio on paper is worth $6.5 million, and I'm looking at everything from borrowing on it, you know, giving people a piece of, you know, every possible thing I can think of to try to, you know, bring in the money to fund the mission. And today I have, you know, I had a talk on Sunday, and by the end of the call, they're like, we need to talk this Monday, like immediately. So today at 2 p.m., I have a call with some folks that have connections to, like, you know, billions. You know, literally they could, you know, this is nothing to them in the big scheme of things. And they seem very excited, you know, as are men, you know, the commercial people I talk to are very excited. This Wednesday, I have a meeting with a real estate developer, a lady that's, like, incredible. She's head of, like, women in technology. She's, you know, she's connected with all the small business groups in the United States. She's connected to all the government agencies that provide funding for COVID relief and humanitarian relief. And she is one of the few investors out of all the ones that I've talked to that is also interested in the humanitarian end. She's not just interested in the commercial end. And, you know, I've talked to her and I said, look, I'm willing to start a company with you and you can be the CEO and we'll put all the IP into the company and it'll be myself and three ladies because the co-inventors on the buildings are ladies, okay? Mm-hmm. They're Ukrainian Russian ladies. Half of their family's in Ukraine, half is in Russia. You can imagine what they're going through with the frickin' war that's going on right now. You know, so this is going to be like a woman-owned company. And I told them, I said, look, I just want to invent. I just want to do engineering. And you know, with that structure, you know, with having, you know, an actual place to put all the IP and having a CEO at the helm, you know, that can that has the business, the real estate connections, all of that, you know, this could be the answer to the prayers because all of a sudden, you know, having somebody like that opens up all the avenues, you know, to commercial, non-commercial, humanitarian.
So how many pre-orders? How many pre-orders would you need? How many pre-orders would you need to reach that goal?
To reach the goal of, you know, are we talking just the, you know, just the world filings? It's $46,000. You know, that would be like probably, I don't know, a handful of pre-orders would do that, you know, in order to raise enough money to, you know, grow and maintain the patent portfolio. I'd probably say, I don't know, I guess it depends what the profit margin is on the pre-orders, which Chris would know more about. But, you know, I'm literally, my intuition right now is telling me to go the GoFundMe route because of the story. Okay. You know, it's a true story. You know, in other words, I don't bullshit people. I talk the truth, and it hurts me a lot because some people don't want to hear the truth. You know, and I speak the truth to people. I don't care who they are, and that's hurt me throughout my life because some people don't want to hear the truth. But you know, my intuition right now is telling me that a GoFundMe would work. You know, we're on a mission to.
I agree. Here's how I'm looking at it, Carlos. I'm looking at it from a David and Goliath perspective. Now, David had, anybody out there can be atheist, but I'm just going by some principles here. David had five stones. Now, the way I'm looking at those five stones is each one represents a strategy. So what you're talking about, the GoFundMe, that's one of the stones. That's a strategy. Okay, the pre-orders, that's another strategy. And, of course, we can probably come up with three more strategies. So now the first one that David used, which in this case, the GoFundMe, that might be the one that takes us over. So, I'm just thinking, you know, if he had five strategies, And then just, you know, work with, you know, yeah.
You're 100%
so, yeah,
correct.
Work on that one, and I'll work on another aspect of it.
No, I love that, you know, and this is, you know, this is the beauty of you, and you know, I feel so blessed that I've run into you guys. You know, a lot of people don't, how do I put this? They're so individualized that they don't understand the value of being part of a team. Now, you know, what's interesting, we're working with a group called Community Grid. You know, they're out of Ohio. They want to build a 400 square foot test greenhouse. They are the ones that actually hooked me up with these potential investors when I told them the problem. Well, the CTO in that is a Marine, right? He and, you know, and, you know, once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine, okay? You're never not a Marine. And, you know, I talked to the dude, and we get it. You know, we understand what it is to sacrifice yourself for team members. You know, we understand team cohesion. So, you know, having a conversation with folks like that is very, very easy because they know the value of teamwork, and they know the value of being part of a team. You know, that's how, you know, that's how Four SEALs can take on, you know, 1,000 people because, you know, they're operating with team cohesion. And you know, that's what I like about Brother Chris and you. You know, you guys are team players, you know, and you know, we're in the minority, you know, probably about 10%. You know, you look at Special Forces, you know, why is it that only, you know, 10 or so percent are able to make it out of, you know, out of that regime? Yes, a lot of it is, you know, it's very, very physical, but it's mental. You know, it's, you know, 99.9% mental. And more importantly, understanding the value of a team. That's what they drill into you in Special Forces. It's everything is about the team. You know, why do they make you carry logs around? Well, you can't lift a log by yourself, you know? And you know, I feel fortunate that I'm finding, you know, the Special Forces of humans, you know, you guys. You know, I'm not worried. I'm putting it in God's hands, but I'm not stopping. You know, just because it's in God's hands doesn't mean I'm not going to sit there and push the ball up the hill. So I thank you guys very, very much for everything.
Amy, you're right. It's teamwork that gets anything worthwhile done. There's simply a team behind it. That's in anything. So I'm pretty sure that it'll happen. So myself, I'll be working on the pre-order. I've been, for a couple of weeks now, I've been just watching a bunch of videos on pre-orders and a similar order and stuff like that. So anyway, but we got the goal set, so, and then we'll fine-tune it day by day.
Well, you know, I was going to say, I was expecting a quote from, you know, the PC, you know, the national stage filing. I thought it was going to be in the 100,000s. I'm really surprised it's so low. I think it's because of the economy. I think the economy, you know, last time when I filed it, it was like double that. So something has happened in the world, you know, which, or maybe it's God helping. I don't know, but you know, I was expecting 150,000 for the filing, and I just got the quote today for 46. I had to read it twice because I was like, wait, is that just, you know? Which, and I read it, and it's for all the countries except Russia, you know, the 12 countries and regions. So, you know, this has given me motivation today. And I'm going to go write the GoFundMe right now. You know, as soon as I get off, I'm going to go write it.
Okay, good. Yeah. Chris, now, we probably quoted it last, you probably quoted last week. For, I don't know, give us a dimension, square footage, 200 square feet.
Well, that's the unique thing. You can have any dimension. So if you know, we know that a 10 by 10 is 100 square feet. So if you want something that's 8 feet wide, then we know that we can make it 12 or 13, 14 feet long.
in the same distance.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get something that has a little more width in one end of it, so say you want to make it 15 feet and you want it to go 200 feet, you can then easily go, you know, what is it, 20 feet? That'll be 15.
Okay.
15 gives you 3.
The square foot way to do it,
which I think Chris, you know, we calculated the other day on the call that we said $150 to $200 per square foot, depending on what features you put in it. Is that right, Chris?
Yes, it is right. And
so, Chris, if we place an order for 200 square feet, what's the turnaround time on that? If we wanted, Chris, I need 4 buildings a day.
I can do it.
That's all I need to know.
Okay.
That's all I need to know.
No, that's not a problem at all. The machines make 2 feet of material per second. So once the package is plugged into it, that thing's going to make every component, and it'll stop right in between each component, and the little light will go on, and you're getting ready for the next component. So it'll give you everything about your puzzle, and all you got to do is screw it together. So it's
I'm glad you brought that up. The tools that'll be needed. Because you have metal buildings. What type of tools would the end user would the assembler need to assemble a building?
I would suggest it to have the vice grip C clamp pliers, and you know the more of those, the merrier. You at least need 2 per person, so that way you can set up 2 studs at one time and put screws in them and then unlock and move down. You put the studs in at 2 feet. You're going to need a tape measure. You know, all your material for your windows and stuff like that should already be there. You just have to know where you're going to put them and put your jack studs in. But it'll show you on the diagram real easily. We know where everything goes. But yes, it is quite simple to assemble just by once you separate the components and then it's laying there, you're like, wow, all right. It goes right together. You can't put the components in the wrong spot except for a door or window. So if you don't put your jack studs in or you don't, you know, put your header in for your door, then your studs are going to be sitting there. But all you got to do is go up and take a screw out and on both sides and take the ones out up top and take that stud completely out or move it over to the side. So, you know, you have that ability with this. Once you put something together, you can actually take it back apart and you can still assemble
it. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's really versatile when it comes to that. But your screw gun, you're going to need a screw gun. I suggest impact guns. They're easier to handle, and they work really well. And when they go down, they're not just trying to drill the screw through the thing. It'll go down and stop. It'll, like, hammer it in. Bah, 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 bah. You know you're done. So the little impact drill is a really nice, handy thing. You don't have a cord to you. You are doing it cordless. If you have a corded screw gun, it does work. It just has more torque. You know, they do make screw guns for metal stud stuff. Hilti has it. It is a superb gun. But there again, you need to have power on site when you're doing that. We can build, you know, right in the middle of the woods. I built an 1,800 square foot house in the middle of the woods with cordless screw guns in 2011 just to prove that I could do it in any jungle on the planet.
but it was with mm-hmm. five people that never touched the material in their life. To build all the components for it, we had about 40 hours in it, but that was including building a 20-foot by 40-foot table in the woods, made from engineered floor joists that were old wooden ones that were in the woods. We pulled them out and reutilized them. And right now, you know, it's been another 11 years, going on 13 years here, or 12 years, that frame is now deteriorating into the ground, and there's trees growing through it. So that wood is rotten. But I walked up to that site about 3, 4, 5 months ago, and I picked up a metal stud that I left there. And it was just as strong, just as shiny as it was the day we put it there. This thing was just laying on the ground. Then went through, you know, 10 winters, 10 summers, a lot of ice, a lot of rain, a lot of snow. And it's perfectly fine. That's the key.
Good.
I had a piece that, you know, I put it in a 5-gallon bucket of water, left it there for 5 years. And when I pulled it out, I wiped it off, and it was just fine. There was nothing wrong with it. I thought it looked blue in the water, but that was the dust because I had it sitting outside. It went through the freeze. It went through all of it inside there and was still perfectly fine laying in the bottom of that bucket. So.
Okay. Well,
you don't have to hurry it up and get it filled. You don't have to. That's one key thing and we want to make sure of. People don't have to worry about if it's sitting outside. So don't worry mm-hmm. about if the weather's bad and you can't get to it. It's just laying there. It'll be fine. It won't rust. It won't do anything. It'll just wait for you.
Okay. Well, we're going to organize on this side this week. And because it comes to, like, say, organized teams and start with one and go from there. And that's how we'll build momentum. Get one team together, get one building done, and once people see that, I like to do it during, I got to organize a live stream team so people can actually check us out on Facebook, YouTube, or whatever during a live stream, actually building. And then prior to that, we need to probably have one Zoom call, if not two, with, you know, the fundamentals, you know, what's all involved, what are the pieces called, what are the tools need, materials, and most of all, safety. You know, so people that will be doing this hands-on. You know, proper shoes, gloves, goggles, that type of stuff, you know. Safety first. So that's all I can think of. All right, anything else you guys want to put out there before we shut it down for today?
I'm good to go. Thank you. I have nothing else to
say. I'm still chewing on everything you said about the
on the statistics.
On the statistics. Yeah. I'm sitting here building a tub right now. Just so people know that I'm multitasking. Putting all the overflows on and the drains in. So I'm trying to get these 100 hotel rooms that I've been working on together. We got 20 of them apart. And we're putting them back together now.
Well, now, have any of you watched, let me make sure I got the right video. Let's see. If you go to YouTube and type in, $1 billion pre-orders. And the specific video is, wait a minute. The specific video is, headline, foldable, that's spelled F-O-L-D-A-B-L-E, one word, foldable, tiny home, has 1 billion pre-orders and 50,000 clients. That's boxable. But the other videos, they got 1 billion. But the bottom line is you're helping people. So they got 50,000 clients, and I think they did mostly social media marketing. So anyway, there were the pre-order videos on topics.
I was going to say, I've seen that Boxable had 70,000. They were behind 70,000 pre-orders. And now they've hit 1 billion. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, 70. Yeah, they have 50,000. All right. 50,000 pre-orders, which totaled up to at least $1 billion.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. That's what I was thinking. So, last I heard they were at 70,000 pre-orders. You ordered them in advance.
Right.
So now they're at 50,000 pre-orders.
Right, right.
So, yeah, they did.
So, and there's other companies out there. But we'll go into more detail on what is a pre-order for those who don't know. But, I think it's a pretty good way to, finance what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And, just as long as you got the, there's one company out in Colorado. They have a pre-order business model. And, once you put your deposit down, then they put you on the building calendar. And then it's so many months out. And then they have a shipping date. Now, that might be 5, 6, 7 months out. But they tell you all that stuff up front. So, anyway, but we'll go into the mechanics of that tomorrow. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and keep safe during the holidays.